Hello and welcome to episode 72 of Champion the Gamer. I'm joined by Sam Hughes. My first question, because I want to get straight away with this, is
Oof.
what can you not do, Sam?
What can I not do? There's many things I can't do. I can't draw. There's
Just
one.
because we just to jump in there, like obviously you voice act, you develop, and you got this whole handsome bar going on, you got this tech thing. What can't you do, mate?
Yeah, art. I can't do art. I'll say that. I could maybe do modern art. I reckon I could pull that off because I could just, talk my way out of a plastic bag. So I could just paint anything and then tell you what it represents metaphorically. I
So
reckon
the
I
whole
could pull off
abstract
that.
thing, just paint
Yeah,
a box
I
of your
reckon I could do that. Yeah.
That's all good. But for someone that doesn't know who you are, Sam, who are you, mate?
That's a very deep question. I need to ask myself, search within, who am I?
That's what we're here for.
I'm Sam Hughes. I'm a voice actor, but I'm also an audio leader at a mobile games company because my day job and career has mostly been in sound design for video games. But I also voice act for video games, animation, commercials, anything really that I get paid to voice. But yeah, I'm also a musician. I play guitar, I sing, I dance, but not very well. Just kind of do my own thing there. But yeah, that's pretty much me. I'm a massive gamer. I love video games. I've loved video games since I was about three or four. I've been playing ever since like the Spectrum ZX Sinclair. And then yeah, I'm just a massive gamer, music, audio nerdy person, really, I guess.
That's why I'm saying you play the guitar, you sing, you act, you dance. I mean, what else is there really
All the best things in life. All the
that
best things in life.
matters?
I actually do also write and do other things as well, but I'm just generally, I love creating. I love being a creative. I even wanted to always make my own video game someday. Too many ideas. It's partly ADHD, partly just inspired by everything all the time.
So where did that love start then? So let's get straight to the games.
Oh
Where?
yeah. So it grew and blossomed over a long time. So like I say, three or four, I dabbled on the Spectrum ZX Sinclair and I played a load of games that I couldn't finish and didn't know how to play because I was really young. I was like four or five playing like Trapdoor. I remember Trapdoor on the Sinclair being super hard. I didn't know what to do. Kept switching characters. No idea what I was doing. But the true love kind of came in more towards the SNES and Mega Drive era. So I had the Master System, that was cool, but it was really the Mega Drive and SNES that really kind of like sold video games to my young mind. I was obsessed with Mario, Sonic. There was a this awesome RPG on SNES that I got hooked on, and that was what got me into RPGs. It's called Mystic Quest. And I found out years later, I don't know why, but in the UK it's not called Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, it's just called Mystic Quest. But I found out ages later that it was a Final Fantasy. And I'm a massive fan of Final Fantasy. My two top franchises are Final Fantasy and Resident Evil. So those are the two that I love the most. And so that was my first gateway game into RPGs. And I played loads on the SNES, just loved playing games. Looking back now, it's partially, I think, related to my ADHD, which I'm not going to keep bringing up, but it does lend to a lot of things I found. Where it was just the perfect combination for me. It was the attention. I was like grasped, I was gripped in the games and I was using my hands, and it was the perfect relaxation because my mind would go quiet because I'm doing everything. I'm playing the game, I'm looking at the game, listening to the game. And then it all kind of grew from there, really. And PS1, PS2 era was when I really, I don't know, really fell deeper in love with games because so many good games came out on PS1 and PS2. The N64 I loved as well before that. So that was like Banjo Kazooie and Mario 64 and all these awesome Lilat Wars, Zelda, of course. But then PS1, that was when my true love came because that was that the secondhand PS1 we got came with Resident Evil 2 as one of the starter games. And I was too young to play it, I was really scared. I was like 8 years old when I first got it, and I used to turn the game on and then turn it off straight away when I started off in the burning Raccoon City. And yeah, but that was eventually I kind of played it properly when I was like 12, and then I fell in love with the franchise. Resident Evil was like, oh, peak back then for me. But now I'm rambling, so there's so many games, so many things, but basically just throughout my whole childhood, there was always something about video games. They taught me so much about mythology, vocabulary, conversation, socializing, knowledge in general. I was obsessed with the soundtracks, the music, the voice acting, even the voice acting from early on. Like Resident Evil 1 has some of the worst voice acting out there, but because of the time and because of like it was the early voice acting time, but even that has its nostalgic charm for me. I hope that answers your question. I
No,
will just
it
keep
does.
going.
I was just going to elaborate on that a bit there, because you said in the past that, like, even as a youngster, playing your games and getting involved in your media, that's where your love for the tech side of it and the voice acting side of it came from. And I was just curious what sort of games it was. And obviously, you mentioned Resident Evil, that is notorious for its. It isn't the first they're going to eat you, then they're going to eat me vibes, but it kind of is, because the voice acting is terrible. But we love it for it. Sorry, was that
Jill,
all?
don't open that door.
But it was at the time where you decided, you know what, I want to sort of pursue this more, or look into this more, and then see where it takes me. Or you just, it was a bit longer after that you thought, actually, no, this could be a career now. When was the sort of transitional period for that? When did you sort of think, I know, I'm gonna look into that?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how it evolved because I loved video games from the young age, and I was also paying attention to the audio quite a lot. So I was always like comforted by the UI sounds in Resi 2, or like even the sounds of the game stuck with me forever, the doors, the footsteps, everything. And I always paid attention to voices, and I was always trying to do silly voices when I was a kid anyway. I was always trying to impersonate my favorite cartoons. I was always trying to like, sound like the Turtles or the Transformers or whatever, whenever I would play. And I think play is the ultimate core of why I do everything. Like, I like to play and have fun and experiment and just explore. And so I was always doing that with my voice. And then I got to about 13 and I started playing guitar. And I got really into playing guitar. And I was playing video games, playing guitar. And at that time, I'd moved away from Essex and we were in a village in the middle of nowhere. So it was literally like a bus to school, and there was a bus every 2 hours to the nearest town. So I was mostly in my bedroom, like a lot of kids that age in that time. And I got really good at video games and guitar. That was the two things I mostly did with my time. So I would do that. And then I started thinking, oh, I'd love to make music for video games. I was playing guitar, I was writing songs, and I was like, oh, I'd love to be like a composer for games, maybe. That'd be awesome. And that was the first kind of trajectory that I was on. So when it came to studying at university and looking for courses, I was like, yeah, I want to do music for games. And so I found a course where I was like, well, I don't want to just do playing guitar. I can play guitar. I don't want to do a degree in playing guitar. What's a useful skill that will actually kind of open up more doors to more work? And I was thinking like, oh, sound engineering. That's kind of more of a like, I could get a job in a studio maybe, and then that can lend towards the skills that I need for music composition. And so I did a course at Huddersfield called Music Tech and Audio Systems. And while I was on that course, we had to do some redesigns. So what that is that we had to take some video clips without any audio, and we had to do all the music and all the sound design. So like for like a short film. And when I was doing that, I got lost in the sound design techniques and like recording different things and layering them up and processing them and just having fun messing around with sounds. And so that's where my interest in game audio came from, because I was like, oh, maybe I could do sounds for games. That would be awesome. And I got really into sound design then and started working on short films and all this other stuff, working towards doing sound for games. But the voice acting thing has just been an innate passion for entertainment. I used to always try and make my friends laugh with all doing the silly voices and impressions and like, comedy skits or whatever. And it was something that I just, from a very early age, made it very clear it was something I wanted to do. Like it somehow always came up in conversation. And so, because I just kept saying it, eventually I started kind of doing it for like university projects, and then I was doing it for this, and then I was getting like a reel together of like free work that I'd done. And then after that, I started pursuing it a bit more seriously, and I started getting kind of like paid roles, and from there, and I honestly still to this day am grateful every day that I've even done one piece of voiceover. I didn't know I would ever get to do even one professional voiceover, never mind the amount I've done already. So it's one of those things where I just kept talking about it, kept making sure that I had my kind of like focus on it, and it just sort of like steamrolled from there.
Because before we get into some of the projects you've done, just elaborate on that a little bit. What are some of the challenges you've sort of had that you didn't realize they were even about when you first started? Because obviously, when you think about it, everyone's like, oh, I can do a podcast, I can do a voice actor, I can whatever. You just send a reel off and hopefully it gets picked up by someone. What are some of the sort of things that you've come across? You're like, I didn't know that. That's a challenge I didn't know was going to even exist to me yet. What are some
Well,
things?
there's quite a few, but one of the things I always try to point out to other new voice actors or people that have got into voice acting, I'm not a formally trained actor, right? I didn't go to RADA, I don't have acting training, I didn't go to drama school, anything like that. I'm completely self-taught. And so I've studied on my own time, but in the early days, I would say I was pretty naive about the acting side of voice acting. I understood it was a part of it, but I think I underestimated how difficult the acting part actually is. Just because you can do a voice and do a scene from a movie or do a quote or, do an impersonation for a short stint doesn't mean you can act. Acting takes work. You have to study it. You have to learn it. You have to learn the craft. And that took me a longer time than the kind of voices that I do, like working out impressions and stuff like that. It's kind of easy. It comes naturally to me. But the acting side of things, understanding how you do a delivery and why you do a delivery a certain way, it takes a lot more depth and thought behind it than a lot of people think. And one of the things you don't realize is that when you are just recording on a mic, you may think that you've genuinely given this performance that delivers this level of emotional gravitas or this level of whatever. And then you listen to the recording and it's flatter than you think because there really is something about how you have to project more through the microphone because people can't see you. So if they hear it on the mic and you just kind of say something normally, then it sounds very bland. So there is a little bit of like hyperbole or like you have to exaggerate sometimes just to make sure you get your point across. But yeah, I would say the acting side of things is probably one of the biggest challenges I faced early on, as well as just how saturated the industry is. Like it's very, very difficult.
Am I right in saying there's like that threshold there where like you've got the you need to sort of put it to 11 to 12 to 13 even to do the extra mile of performance, right? But there's also that bit of like it's super easy though to come across too forced.
Yeah, it's a fine line that you have to toe because if you go too hard, then it's exaggerated and over the top. But then again, depending on the genre, say like anime or JRPGs, exaggerated is kind of what you're going for. Like people want that. So again, it's all about the nuance of what you're performing for and why. And just to, if I can make this an extra long answer,
Go for it, mate.
another challenge that everyone has to get used to, I didn't struggle too badly, if I'm honest, but one of the things that you have to really kind of get your head around is that there's a ton of rejection, like a ton. If you're sensitive to rejection, voice acting may not be for you because it feels very personal. It's not, but because it's you recording yourself and putting your voice out there, it feels super personal when people say no or like it's not for us. However, 90% of voice acting is rejection, if not more, because you have to audition, 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 audition. And when someone doesn't pick you, it doesn't mean you're shit. That's not what it means. It means you weren't a right fit for the role. The delivery didn't quite fit the character. These people, casting directors and, game producers, everyone, they have a character in mind and they want you to embody the character and they want you to succeed. They're not against you. They're kind of listening to you and seeing whether you can breathe life into the character that they've made. And if you aren't just 100% right for that, then that's it. You move on, audition for another job. And yes, there's going to be gigs that really mean a lot to you that you really, really want, but you're going to have to let go of those too. Like you're just going to have to send off auditions or do auditions and just leave it there and try and forget about it. That's what I do these days. I try and audition and just not really think about it. Sometimes it's harder than it's easier said than done. But it's definitely rejection is going to be a huge part of your life if you choose to pursue voice acting.
And I guess it's not any other job really, but I guess where if you have created these things you're really proud of and still get rejected, it doesn't mean that later on in whatever time frame, someone else might see that in some fashion and go, actually, that can make sense in this setting, or I can take it and take it this direction, or maybe even the people that have said no to you on this particular role might give you another one.
Exactly that. It's a long-term game. It really, really is. I've had gigs that have come from something that happened like 10 years ago. Like I've connected with someone or I worked with someone else who knew someone or whatever. And then over time, they've come around and oh, they're making their indie game now or something. And they're like, hey, I'd love to have you in my game. Or like I worked with someone on a project 5 years ago, and then because the producer on that then went somewhere else, and they were like, I know a guy. And then so I got to audition for something else. Like it's one of these things that just you have to just be patient. Excuse me. You have to be patient. Like when you're putting out all this stuff, you just kind of be you, put you out there. And the hardest thing, and I say this to audio people as well, like because game audio is very, very hard to get into as well as voice acting these days. And the hardest part of all of this is keeping going. That's the hardest part because you'll see people succeed around you and you'll see people succeed before you. You'll see people kind of doing a different path and it working out for them, but not working out for you. And that is the dangerous part of social media, which you'll also need to be on as a voice actor because, you know, how the hell else is someone going to know who you are? And social media is a great tool, but it's also an immense distraction from the focus sometimes because you'll see all this other stuff and you'll be like, oh, why am I not progressing? Why am I not getting there as fast? Why didn't I get noticed for this? I did that, but better. And that's just the way of the world and it's going to happen. So you have to get ready for a lot of stuff that you might not be prepared for. And you've just got to keep your head down and keep going. You know, there's a lot of people out there who don't make it till their 30s or 40s, but then there's some who get a lucky gig at like 18 or younger. And then they're a voice actor now.
Or they're Morgan Freeman and they wait until they're 38.
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah. So mesh that with the video games because you're playing these games as a kid, you're playing as a teen and whatever, you're growing up with these stories and whatever. And there's a lot of stories that grip us individually. Are there some stories that you can think of or games you can think of that you went, I'd love to be part of that in some fashion? Like that, this has really gripped me. Like you mentioned Mystic Quest, it might be Chrono Trigger. If someone did a Chrono Trigger game, movie, I'll be all over it. But like, if it was, is there any stories you can think of or games that have really gripped you in that way? You think, I'd love to be a part of that. Like, what set the stage for you to go, I can re-pursue it now?
That's a very good question. So there's so many great stories that I'd love to be a part of. Now, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but to be in a Final Fantasy or Resident Evil story would be like a dream come true. Doesn't even have to be a main character, just to be in one. But in terms of stories, I really like, I love exploring emotional depth. I'd love to be another character where I get to explore a broad range of emotions. So it's a cliche, but it's a fantastic performance. But like, The Last of Us has some of the best performances we've ever seen in video games. Same as like God of War, the newer ones. And there's many like that that I'd love to be in to just deliver like something deep and rich. But I'd also love to be in like a cheesy action movie style game. Because I think that would be super fun just to lean in and go all action here. I mean, I'm a massive Arnold
I was
Schwarzenegger
literally about to say, we need your Schwarzenegger impression at some point.
fan, right? I mean, he's what I do. But I'd love to just go full cheese as well and just lean in. And comedy. Comedy is a big love of mine. So anything that makes people laugh, makes them cry, makes them feel. I'd love to just connect with players.
Because you've been a part of, I mean, maybe you can mention some now, but like, you know, your Alan Wakes, your Controls, you know, the Descent or Ascent, like different projects that you've been part of. Has doing those actually made you more, I don't know, because I don't, we can get into your play types in a minute, what you do play day to day, but has it opened your eyes a little bit into different genres and themes? And, you know, have you taken on a role that's actually given you an open eye to another genre?
That's a good question. I've always been quite a variety gamer. Like, I don't stick quite rigidly to my genres. I do tend to lean towards RPGs, puzzle games, and horror games as like kind of like a my go-to. But I try to play everything because I do love games in all their forms. And I wouldn't say there's been a role that opens me up to more. I guess, but I guess just age and also just being more curious has led me to play a variety of games. And I don't judge or I don't like if someone recommends a game to me, I'll probably play it. There's been so many indie games that I love. There's been so many games that I didn't expect to love that I did purely because I gave them a chance. And I think that's just also part of the mixture of creativity and curiosity that I've always had. I always love to learn. So, like, I would love to learn about everything if possible, but there's not enough time in this world. And so with games, it's all about, I love game design in general. I'm an audio designer, but I love storytelling. I love game design. I love just the whole creative spectrum. So I'll play a game and I'll be like, even if I don't like certain things, I'll be like, why don't I like that? Why doesn't it work for me? Is it because it's clunky? Is it because it's bad? Or is it because it's just something I don't like? And I think that adds to my performance in just trying different games. And even games that don't have voice performance, I'll sometimes imagine what the game would be like with voices. And some of these ones that are mostly text-based, I provide my own voice to myself just for fun, for practice. So I'd say they inform me in general, but the roles themselves haven't made me play a broader genre of games.
It's so funny you said that because there's a little fun backstory to me was when I played GTA 3 for the first time, I told myself and made myself believe that Rockstar made Claude a silent protagonist because you have to imagine your own voice.
Yes.
That's literally what I thought. I thought they made it to the point where you had to use your brain a bit more and engage a bit more. Gave me a bit too much credit. So what are you getting? I mean, I know you said a lot of this stuff back home, or home, quote unquote. But what are you gaming day to day? What's your daily gaming look like? What sort of games are you playing?
Right now I'm obsessed with Clair Obscur Expedition 33. I absolutely adore it. From all angles. The music, soundtrack of the year, easy. Game of the year for me, without a doubt. The performances, oh, they're so good. The visuals, it's stunning. And the gameplay, oh, it tickles my heart so well because it just reaches right into my nostalgic RPG heart and gives me turn-based combat, but with innovative combat design. And I can't get enough of it. I can't get enough at all. So I'm playing that at the moment. I haven't got to the end, so obviously no spoilers. I'm not going to say anything else, but that's one. I'm also trying out the Blueprints,
Oh, yeah.
which I've heard lots
My
of good
next thing, I
things
think.
about. Yeah, I've started it. It's very, very cool, very interesting. I love a good puzzle game, and I love games that don't spoon feed you. So it's one of the reasons why I love Expedition 33 is that with the narrative and the story, it doesn't do like too much exposition. Like some games have to do a lot of setup in the beginning and be like, this was our world in this year, and this is what happened, and that's why things are happening like this now. It just goes in and it starts using terminology that you're like, wait, what's that? What are we doing?
I have the
And
same. I'm playing. Sorry to cut you off. I'm playing Akami
no, go
again,
for it.
and Akami is like the first hour. It feels like it's just text based.
Yeah.
I'm just watching the story unfold in a book form. It's so frustrating. But yeah, sorry.
There's a place for it, and I like it in certain games, but I don't. It's like the same when. So I hate it when characters are telling me every 2 minutes what to do before I've even had a chance to look at the scenery. I'm just like, yeah, I know, I've got a puzzle. Stop telling me how to do the puzzle. Or they're like talking to themselves like completely unrealistically. It was like, oh, I have to go over there now. Oh, I have to pull that lever and go up the lift. And I'm just like, yeah. Like. Know where I'm going.
I'm the same way as you, whereas I feel like partly age, I guess, where you said about the retro collection a minute ago. Like that's because I was like, I don't, I'm busy, yes, and I've not got a lot of time free potentially, but I don't want to spend that time playing a yearly release of FIFA or
No.
Sony Sport Box. I want to experience these stories and these worlds, and I want to see how different the Akami artwork is to the Punisher artwork. It's something completely random, you know what I mean? And experiencing different fields of everything else. So is there anything that you think you've played in the last sort of 12 months, 2 years that's really sort of reignited this love? Or does it always stay the same where you're like, my mindset is stories, different genres, different types. Like, are you a variety guy by nature, or are you trying to keep that there so your creativity stays the same?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just a variety guy by nature. Like, I get very easily into lots of different things. Like, I'm always trying different hobbies. I'm always trying different games. Like, and I get certain fixations. Like, back at uni, I nailed the expert of Guitar Hero Aerosmith. For some reason, I just got super into it and just wanted to smash it. And I used to play a ton of FIFA 09. Oh, God, that's how old I am. FIFA 09 and FIFA 10. And again, I got like fixated on it just because I was playing with housemates and having such a great time. And there's a game right now that's nothing to do with story whatsoever, but because it's been a part of our friend group for the last, oh my God, 6 years now, that I picked it up again. I played it first on the GameCube, but for the last 6 years, I've been playing Super Smash Bros. With my friends, Ultimate, on Switch. And to a point where I accidentally got pretty good at it. Like, we play all the time, but one of my friends, very, very good friend of mine, he takes it pretty seriously. He like watches the pro scene, he learns all the pro moves and everything. So just by playing against him and him coaching me and me having the curiosity of like, I want to be good at this game, I'm kind of at the level where I could enter local competitions now, which is not something I really wanted or chose to do. It was just something that me and my friends would just play all the time, constantly. We would play so much, like at least every week, it's for one period. And then we got to the point where we were just like, oh my God, we're actually like really just came down like that. And we're now tempted to enter for fun, just some local tournament. We'll probably get our asses handed to us in a reality check because we've just played each other mostly, and I've played online some. But it's just one of those kind of like dark horse talents now where at work, if we do like Smash after work, they'll be like, damn, I didn't know you could play. And I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of play a lot. Like,
That's literally what I did with Halo, man. Like, I played Halo so much when it first came out. Well, not when it first came out, I got slightly after, but so much with the basketball guys I was playing with that at one point, me and Gary were like, we should just play doubles. And we
Yeah.
did like weekly weekend tournaments. I mean, like, this is madness now. What are we doing? Now, we're going to get back into this whole podcast thing is about learning about the gamer behind the person and the person,
Okay, nice.
right? So, like, we'll get into a bit more about you a bit later because I've got some definite questions. But let's get into the gamer side of things really deeply. We do hot takes and solid debates. Have you got any gaming hot takes?
Hot takes.
Something to really put a, whether the phrase is about the ether. Stir the pot a little bit.
Stir the pot. Okay, where can I go? So one hot take is that I'm tired of the time equals value so that people make massive games. So like I'm so tired of huge games that I'm like, I do not have the time to do everything in this game. So I love a good open world game, but stop making them like massive, okay? And like consumers need to understand that length of a game doesn't equal value. Yeah, it can be frustrating, of course, if they don't do an 80 € game and it's like 2 hours long. It's a bit different. But certain things, they're like, oh, I want like a 60 plus hour game if I'm paying £80. And I'm like, oh, I don't have time to play 60. Like, if it's every game was 60 plus hours, I play like one or two a year. I don't get time to game like I used to. I used to spend all summer playing Final Fantasies, like, and that was great, but I'm not 13 and off school for 6 weeks anymore.
I was literally just applauding then because I'm the same way. I think the whole time versus value is one thing, and then the time versus supposed replay value is another one. Because a game can be, let's say, 4 hours. Let's make it a bit easier. A game that's 4 hours can be replayable for a number of different reasons. It could be just the story's so great you want to go back to it. It can be different endings. It can be like Resi where you get the bazooka later and different things to go through it again
Mate,
with.
you're talking my language. Replayability is the best thing about Resident Evil for me. Like, it's replayability in a game. I don't know. I seem to be one of those rare people that likes to replay a game because so many people just want to rinse through one and move on or have an in crazy long game and then just, move on after that. Whereas I want a game that I can delve into and I can do it again and I can get more out of it and I can reuse it. And like, Resi is the ultimate version of replayability for me.
Because we had this debate all the time about Assassin's Creed. Now, I know that's got a great fan base and it's a great game, full stop. But like my thing with Assassin's Creed, just as an example, is you've got the same like 10 icons in a times 50. And they think
Two was the last great one.
that's length of game there. That's value for money because you're going to play it for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. But I'm doing the same 10 things 10 times. It's like, well, 50 times. It's not worth it to me. I'm not going to
Gets
do that.
so old, and escort quests in Assassin's
Yeah.
Creed, or like tailing quests where you have to eavesdrop, they get a bit old after like the first three. But that's my other hot take, that Assassin's Creed 2 was the last best one. That was it of Assassin's Creed. I loved to load after that. Like, I enjoyed the Ezio storyline in general. Black Flag was awesome, but then kind of after that, I don't know, they got too big. Even when 3 came out and I saw the map, I went, ugh. It just was
It's
like,
Connor
oh,
for
I
me.
don't want to.
Yeah, it's Connor for me. Like
Yeah,
that.
Connor was a really bland protagonist, to be
I
honest.
forget the guy's name. What's the guy in Watch Dogs? Because Watch Dogs is not actually a bad game, but the character on Watch Dogs, Adrian.
I've not played Watch Dogs,
So
actually.
bland and boring. So imagine playing as me in a video game. That monotone, just same thing. That's what it'd be like. And I was like that with Connor with Assassin's Creed, because I think Revelations is fabulous. I love it. I know
Yeah, Revelations is great, yeah.
that can kind of be a bit of a hot take in itself, because some people don't like Revelations. But I agree with you. Assassin's 1, 2, Brotherhood, Revelations is probably about it for me. Black Flag, I'm not really that sold on. I know people love it, but.
I love it. It's Pirates of the Caribbean, the game almost. You know, it's really good. It's quite unique in that regard because you have all the boats, boat combat, and like all the different islands, and you get to go around the kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean stuff. So it's cool. But
And then what are some of the, just while we're on that, I suppose, what are some of the games that we would be shocked to learn that you do love? Is there any kind of like indie little ones that you've come across that you've played so many hours in that you didn't think you would?
oh yeah, and Inscription was an amazing game. That's absolutely incredible, and I recommend everyone plays it. It's one of those indie games that you should go in knowing nothing, and you should just go in and play it and give it a chance and keep going. Don't stop.
Because they're replayable, right? Like,
Yes.
I mean, I've played. I don't know if it really counts as an indie anymore, but like say a Celeste or something like that, or Balatro even. There is innate replayability there.
Hades as well. Sorry.
Hades is perfect, yes. I love Hades. It's the only thing I
So
actually
good.
played my Switch for was Hades before I traded it in. So going back to the whole like replayability debate, what are some of the examples you can think of where you're like, I loved this game. And then when you finished it was like, I'm sad I finished it because I've completed it and I feel good about it, but I'm never gonna play it again.
Yeah, there's a few like that because I am a bit of a trophy hunter, and I was more of a trophy hunter back in the day. I had to let it go after a while because you can't platinum everything. But there are certain games like I think Alan Wake jumps to mind, even though there's a bit of replayability in there. But once I'd 100%ed it, I was a bit sad that I didn't really get to play it anymore. And there's quite a few that kind of fall into that category. God of War, the first of the new ones. So what was that? 2018? God of War 2018. I was a bit sad when I platinumed that. I kind of wanted more out of it. But this is where my mindset started to change and needs to change, really, because I got too hung up on the trophies. So I would 100% a game, platinum it, and then it was dead to me. Like, platinum, well, there's no point. There's no more trophies, which is not what gaming is about. Like, I used to play games and 100% them because I wanted to 100% them. Like Resident Evil 4 on the PS2, there was no trophies, but I went through and got every single little damn thing out of that game. And I think that's that's one. Resident Evil 4 is probably the game I have played the most in every form on every console because I complete it. Not always the Mercenaries, not at all. The Mercenaries was a bitch, and I did that on PS2 once, got the hand cannon, never again. getting 5 stars on every level with every character. However, it's one that I've played on every console, and every time I 100% it, I get a little bit disappointed that I'm not going to play it anymore. But I'm now currently playing it on Switch whenever I travel. I play Resi 4 Original on the Switch, and then I got to play the remake again, so that was awesome. And I'm that bad that I. My friends laugh at me. This is how obsessed with Resi I am. I love an opportunity to play Resident Evil. Any excuse to play it. So Resident Evil 4 and all this, same with the Final Fantasies, when they were on PS4, but then the PS5 version was available, like the free upgrade, it would ask you whether you wanted to transfer all of your trophies over or your save data.
And you said no.
I always say no. I
Yeah.
always say no. And I'm like, no, I want to get those tasty trophies again. How dare you? I'm not cheesing this. I'm going to do the entire game again and get another platinum. I did that with Resi 2. I did it with Resi 7. I did it with Resi 3. Or maybe 3. Yeah, 3 was PS4 and 5, right? Yeah. I've done it with pretty much every Resident Evil. I say no so that I get to play through it again fresh. And it feels so good.
Now, before we get into Coach's questions, which is the next portion, where do you sit on the Resi movies? Oh dear, that's not a good sign.
So, I love Resident Evil, and it has deserved a much better live action representation forever. So, the first Resident Evil movie is all right. The first Mia Jovovich movie by Paul W.S. Anderson is okay. I don't mind that. It's, you know, very of its time, and it kind of does the right amount of nods that I was happy. However, after that, it got very silly, and I was like not very happy with it after the second movie, pretty much. I mean, So this is where I have to say that a lot of people go, oh, you know, people complain about everything. No. There are just very strong fans of the lore and the narrative. And, you know, we want to see it served properly. And when it's a cash grab movie where they don't really know what they're talking about, but they just take certain characters and throw them in and then just do things with it, it gets frustrating. There are some nice moments, like throughout the franchise, like they recreate the entire Wesker fight from five, for some reason in one of the movies. And then there's some other cool stuff, but most of it is just rubbish.
Some
And
of the
then,
worst, that Wesker fight is some of the worst CG I've ever seen.
yeah, I mean, I'm just not very impressed with where they took it in general. How hard is the stuff's right there? Like, and then the Netflix show was pretty bad. Like, it was another reinterpretation, and it didn't do very well, unsurprisingly. And then even Infinite Darkness, like the CGI movies are pretty cool, but they go a bit crazy because they're CGI and they are canon at least. So like Death Island is pretty good. Degeneration and Damnation are pretty good. So I don't mind them. But Infinite Darkness, the Netflix animated CGI thing, didn't really land for me. It was kind of a bit of a non-plot, but I don't know. It wasn't really kind of necessary. Vendetta also was quite fun. That was just, again, a bit ridiculous with like gun fu and like all this crazy gunplay and all this other stuff. But in terms of the live action movies, sadly, it's just been a bit of a disappointment. So even with the new one that's coming out, where they're rebooting it again, I think like most of the fan base, I'm just kind of like, yeah, we'll see, I guess.
It's just interesting. I just love hearing people, especially Resi fans that are really big fans of it. I love hearing their takes because I actually think the Resi movies, like I say, one and two, are probably the best ones.
Yeah.
And after that, it's just purified madness. But I'm like, once you get to three, just accept that, and then just
Yeah.
but then even
Yep.
because I'm actually a really big fan of, for different reasons, the Netflix Lance Reddick show, because I actually really enjoyed the fact the pacing was different and it took a different slant and it went a different direction. Because you can't keep. They've made so many mistakes with Resi
Yeah.
that I was like, that's actually quite a different appeal. That even if I mean Infinite Darkness is probably a bad example because it's a different kind of show, but a different pace, different style. I quite enjoyed that, and I was like,
Yeah.
if you're not going to do it right anyway, give me something I can really invest in separate. Because I don't even mind Welcome to Raccoon City, because Welcome to Raccoon City is just a clusterfire of random BS I've thrown in one movie. I quite enjoy that.
I think that's the thing. Once you accept it for what it is, you're okay. Like, but Welcome to Raccoon City was such a weird. I mean, there's good parts and bad parts, and then there's just like the whole vibe. And I, again, like you, I enjoy things for different reasons, but I have to let go of the Resi fan part because I'm just like, not again. But then the rest of me just has fun with what it is. Like, I'd happily watch it with friends or watch it with other Resi fans, and we go, oh, what is that? What are they done with Leon? What are they doing?
Oh, they're never going to get Leon right, are they? Really?
I guess not. Like in the Mia Jovovich movies, he's the worst version of Leon I've ever seen. Like it's just this like buff dude in a wig who is like puts I can't remember a scene where he puts his hand on Ada's leg and she pushes it away or something. And I'm just like, oh, stop ruining it. Why?
Well, now that I've upset you a little bit, let's go to coaches' questions. So this section is a chance for, because I post question videos on my page. That's part of my package. And I often pose some random ones at the guests. Now, what I find is I've actually got some questions for you from some listeners, which is great. And I've sprinkled in some of my own. So work's done for me a little bit, which is nice. This first one is from Laney. He says, what gig did you take on you weren't really sure about, but turned out to be amazing?
Ooh, there's a couple I can reference here. So one of my favorites ever was that I was the lead role in a game called Brightpaw, which was by an awesome studio called Radical Forge. Now, I knew the guys for a long time. We got on really well as people. And they pitched this project that they wanted me to voice. And I knew nothing really about it, but I was game because I was like, yeah, I'd love to work with you guys. I just want to work with you guys. It sounds great. Whatever we do is going to be fun. And it turned out to be one of my best favorite roles of all time. I got to explore a lot of stuff with it. We did weekly reads of the script. I got really into the character. We designed the character together. It was one of the most collaborative experiences I've had as a voice actor. That was amazing. So that's one that I will say. But the other one was Dulac and Fay Dance of Death that I did with Salix Games. That was a similar thing in terms of like I'd known them for a while and they were like, hey, we want you to come in. And I actually did the demo for their main characters. And then I was cast as like 10 characters in it. And I'd never done that many characters in one game before. And it was quite early on in my career. And fun story about that one, I even had to do a sex scene in it. So it was a variety of stuff going on. But it was a great acting experience. Like being 10 different characters, having to switch to all these different places, having to be these different people, working in that setting, like we recorded down at Pinewood, it taught me a lot. So that was one of the most like amazing voice acting experiences very early on that taught me a lot about voice acting.
Am I right in saying that there's a bit of freedom there? Because you say about 10 characters, 10 characters is obviously wild, but
It was a bit many.
it can be scary throwing yourself out there essentially in a booth on your own, sort of.
Yeah.
But is there that, if you accept that, there's like a freedom to it afterwards where you can kind of actually apply it to many different things, even in the same movie? Do you get that experience?
I mean, I wish I could apply the confidence I have in the booth to every part of my life. Because when you're acting and when you just let loose and become this character, you just do it. You don't think about it. You don't overthink it. You just become this character and you just act like they would. They've written this script. You scream, you cry, you whimper, you do whatever, you beg, you do anything. And you just do it with clarity and confidence. Outside of the booth, if I could do that with every area of my life and be that sure of my character and who I am, God, I think that'd be like you'd be leading your best life.
I've said it so many times about just general life because I obviously coach basketball. I coach sports for 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
It's like I could talk to a room full of, or a lecture hall, if you like, full of people and do a speech, or I could do a session much easier than talking to three guys in a bar. Like,
Really?
a group of friends in a bar because I'm not that sociable in terms of like confidence in myself. That to
Right.
me is like playing a role because you can put on a performance, quote unquote. Even
Yeah.
doing a session like I do the little ballers, so the well they like 2 to 6 year olds,
Oh.
and you're putting on a performance because they need that interaction, they need that engagement, something to
Yeah.
really latch on to. It's
It's a
not just about,
persona, right?
yeah, if you're that Coach Marv that's really monotone and boring like I am now, it's not going to really engage. You need to be that extra self. Do you know what I mean? So I do get that aspect of it.
I do want to add that you're not monotone and boring at all, by the way. You're actually a very active speaker.
My voice is horrendous, bruv.
Everyone thinks that. Everyone thinks that. The first thing I had to get
It's
over as a voice actor was that
horrendous.
I'd hear my voice a lot. That's one of the
Yeah.
first things I had to deal with.
I mean, I did a very good Shrek impression at school, and I was quite. Funny enough, my dad, this is a bit of a random tangent now, but my dad was big into, he used to do stage performances.
Oh,
Like,
wow, nice.
I mean, not like massive. I'm talking about local ones and sort of some in London, ever, but like stage performances, and like, our whole family does it. And my wife's always like, you're literally sat here doing the Hamilton voices. Just do a Hamilton performance. Like I do love that side of things. I'm quite a big like musical guy, so
Oh,
maybe
me
that's
too,
in the
man.
future.
I'd love to be in a musical. That's like one of my dreams. In fact, the epic musical I've been obsessed with for ages. And I'm keeping an eye on the Ilium because I'm like, I really want to audition for this.
No, amazing. Okay, good game. Dan has put. Have you ever had a line to say or a bit of dialogue that was more difficult than you thought? Because the amount of emotion needed.
Yes, but I'm trying to remember which one it was. And this happens a lot with the more subtle emotions. It's very difficult. Like, say I wanted to be really sad about something, and I said, I don't know, here we go, right? There are so many ways to approach that. But if I just went for the normal, like, here we go, you can sense something, but it doesn't quite have the gravitas to it that maybe you want for the scene. It depends on what's happened. Has he lost someone? Has someone died? Like, what is the sadness of this scene? And you just kind of have to really dig deep and get it. And you have to bring in things that would come out naturally, but are not natural to reproduce. So, like, there are certain things like voice breaks or stuff like that that you would have where you're like, here we go, you know, or something where you're just like, okay, let's get this together. And it's not easy to get that in the moment all the time. And sometimes you don't really know what emotion they're going for. So depends how good the direction is. This is something I just want to say really quickly. I'm very defensive of voice actors when they get criticized for a performance, but there's a team behind it. When certain performances, yeah, some are just bad, but they're not ever just bad because of the voice actor. Like there's the director, there's the casting, there's so many facets of it that have come to play. And that, like, even the performance that they chose to put in the game, they probably did multiple takes. There's probably a better one in there, but they chose it for different reasons, timing, the setting, the whatever. But yeah, no, there's been many times where a line has been a bit tricky with to get the right emotion out and the right way to give that emotion. Because you can approach a line, even like that, here we go. You could say that in a million different ways, depending on the character, depending on the scene, depending on whatever, and just you, how you would deliver it. It's crazy how, as an actor, you have to kind of go with your gut, trust the feeling, and then be like, yeah, that's the one.
Is there ever a time where simplicity comes into it? And what I guess I kind of mean is, I'm thinking of like a Andre Brouwer from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's
Yeah.
very, his character is very, I mean, monotone is a really harsh phrase. I don't really mean that, but I mean like a very universally same level voice.
He's very consistent.
Yeah, so it's so, but then the same token, it's one of the best performances I think ever, because you can feel his emotion from different, his sadness, his humor, his excitedness,
Yeah.
but the voice never really seems to change. So there's a talent there, because he's delivering performance that you can still feel those emotions with the same kind of voice, if you know what I'm trying to say. So is
Oh,
there
yeah.
that kind of, where you can go back to a bit earlier about overdoing it, where if you force it, sometimes it's too much, but sometimes it does just need that bit more subtlety.
Yeah, no, 100%. In fact, it takes me back to a very, very early audition where I was taught something that stuck with me forever. I think I was reading for some angry character. And I went in and I was like yelling and like rah, you know, it's just very like rah, angry. But angry isn't always loud, right? Angry isn't always yelling or shouting or overreacting or whatever. Anger can be like, just get out. Do you know what I mean? It can be like, you know, in so many subtle like nuances that you don't have to do it that way. So yeah, it's a lot of it can be about simplicity and subtlety, because you have to remember what it's like when you're that upset or that angry that you don't do loads of stuff. Like, you know, say you're really upset, you're not just angry, but you're hurt to the core and you're mad, you're upset, you have all these, we're complex beings. We're not just happy or sad or, you know, something else. We're always like a combo of things. We have combinations of thoughts going on. We have so many things happening in our lives that we feel different things all the time. Like emotions are fluid. And we may feel something one second, but the next second it's blended into something else and it's developing. We're processing those emotions. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And so like say you've had a fight with your significant other. You're angry, but you love them and you're upset. Like it's a combination of stuff where you're just like, I don't want to talk right now. You know? And it's just, please, just no. You know? So it's always a combination of like subtle things layered up, is what I try to say. Like, you know, it's all complex things are a bunch of simple stuff put together, is the worst way I could phrase that. But anything complex is just a layer of simple things.
That's a really good approach, I think, because I think you can sort of make it too difficult for yourself before you even start.
Oh
Maybe
yeah, overthinking is a
get
big.
something in there, and then we'll build it from there. And I think that makes the most sense.
Yeah, you start with the core, basically.
And before I ask you a couple of silly gaming questions, of course, Railsy's asked you your dream voice actor role.
Oh, my dream role. Either a gritty action survivor main character or some sort of like Q-like support character that has some sass. I think that would be fun. Just like some sassy like guy in the chair voice. That would be really cool.
I don't know why, but my immediate thought went to Doris Roberts from Everyone Loves Raymond. Just that support character that just has the most sass alive, and just beautiful.
Yeah. I'd love to be the comic relief or the sassy, witty one.
Do you, this is such a bizarre a tangent, because I just mentioned Doris Roberts. Do you have the opportunity to play different genders, different
Oh.
people from different world, walks of life. Do you ever have that opportunity, or is it more just you sort of you pigeonhole before you start sort of thing?
So when you say different genders and different walks of life, you mean literally any other character?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
So I had an interesting one, and it's a little bit controversial even for me, to be honest, on The Ascent, because we used a program called Altered AI to basically use my performance to fuel a library of voices. So it was all done ethically, like the voice actors who provided their voices for the library banks, they'd all been paid fairly or whatever, and it was using my voice recordings as the performance, but then applying that to a different voice. And through that, I got to play different aliens, I got to play different characters. And the part I wasn't really 100% on, but it only happened with a couple of characters, was they also used it to voice women characters. Now, there's two ways of looking at that, and I'm on very sensitive soil right now, so I'm going to try and word it well. There's two ways of looking at it. Is that I would never, especially as a white cis male, would never want to take roles away from marginalized groups, like, other ethnicities or like women or anything like that. But at the same time, it opens more doors for actors to explore other characters without. So the idea being that I didn't perform differently because I was a woman in this character role, for example. It was just applied to a woman's voice. And I think part of that is kind of cool in a way, because it's not different. They're not different people. They're still the same character. Do you know what I mean? I hope I'm phrasing that correctly. But what that was one way that I looked at it at the time. But looking back at it, I wouldn't do it again. This was during the early days of AI. We were talking about how it was used. It was all ethically done, but at the same time, I don't think it's fair that someone like me would voice those kind of characters when we have actors out there who can do it. And I'm also very, very against AI, by the way, especially in voice acting. Like, I don't like AI in general for replacing a lot of people, especially in the voice world. But it is coming, and we need to do it as ethically as possible. And so this was part of the exploration time where we were trying to find the best way to do it for everyone, where budgets are involved, but also like actors are involved and everyone's getting paid fairly. So like it is a female actress, but also my performance driving it. So not really replacing anyone. It was a weird combination. It was a weird combination.
I
But yeah.
suppose I just get curious because it's like, I mean, it's a silly example. You think of a Norbit or a Mike Myers type thing, where actors can play different roles, or like a Panto, you can play
Yeah.
different roles, right? I
Yeah.
just wonder if that line's getting blurred a bit more in the voice acting world, because essentially, I could talk in my own voice now, and that can be applied to any voice that the director and producer thinks of. Just because I'm speaking it doesn't mean it can be, as you put there, white cis male. It could be anybody. I wondered how much if they have any input on that, or if any, thoughts on that, or they just do what they want to do with it. But
Well,
because to me that would be like a, and I know I'm very new to this whole thing. But if I put my voice down on something, and then it was used in the movie or the TV show or the game, whatever, as I don't know, an alien or a fish or something, it's still me. I can still be proud of that performance. They applied it in the way they wanted to, which is no different to an actor putting something on tape, in my opinion.
true, but you always know where your voice is going. Like you always get a good voice contract, you always discuss it. It's not like they're going to apply it to something where you're like, oh, no, that's not good. Or if it does, then you do something about it. But it's like Destiny Solas. There was like kind of like fan, semi-professional fan project of this episode made with Destiny, basically. They made a short film with Destiny. And I voiced robots. I voiced different what they called. I forgot what the main characters in Destiny are called now, but basically those. And also like some astronauts and all sorts. And it was really fun. The variety is crazy what you get out there. So it is really, really cool that you can voice aliens and be whatever creature. I mean, one of my favorite things to do is creature voices. So I love doing weird shit with my throat and my mouth and voices and doing crazy stuff and doing like these screeches or like these roars and then talking like an orc or like, just like monsters are really, really fun.
Yeah, one of my favorite clips on YouTube is Evangeline Lilly talking about Lost, talking about the B and E's doing the whole dialogue is great and talking to different people is great, but getting to the is like it's so much more fun than what it is if you were doing a proper set of dialogue. I love
Yeah,
that
like
too.
my kind of like early gigs were mostly emotes. So it
Yeah.
was like efforts and stuff like that, grunts and
Yeah.
deaths and screams, and then I was doing it for like creatures. That was the fun part. Like I was just doing creature attacks and creature deaths, and they're really fun and they're very cathartic, I tell you now. Like doing the angry roars and the death screams and stuff like that. You know, if you've got to be careful about your voice, of course, but afterwards, whoa, it's a great stress relief.
Now, before we get into the sort of last portion, which is create a spotlight, a couple of quick fire gaming ones then, because I've got to get these in because I really need to know
Of
more about
course,
who
go
you are
for
as
it.
a game, my friend. So, what is your favorite piece of gaming dialogue?
Favorite piece of gaming dialogue? Oh,
And what I'll do
wow.
is I'll make it fair on yourself because I've done the same thing. I've written down the game I like the most because I think the whole game is amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Ooh, it's going to take me a second. See what comes to me straight away. Best piece of gaming dialogue. There's been so many games. And of course, I'm obsessed with Expedition 33 right now. So all that's replaying in my head is loads of scenes from that.
Because
But I.
I'll give you mine because I think
Go
my
for it. You do yours first, and maybe it
because
is
one thing that
mine.
I think opened my eyes a bit was when I got into a slightly older, I guess, sort of teens was understanding that games weren't just even movies, but games weren't just like this fun piece of like whatever you want to call it, but like
Yeah.
Legacy of Kain for me.
Oh,
But this
yeah,
is
nice.
essentially Shakespeare. This is unbelievable. The whole Raziel thing at the very beginning of Sorry for One is just
Yeah.
best I've
Yeah.
ever seen in
So
my
good.
life. I
Yeah.
love it. Yeah, any of that is for me.
Yeah, I love Soul Reaver. Oh. Okay. I think it'll be something in Final Fantasy 7 or 8. Because those were the first ones that really resonated with me on a deep level. Like that was one of the earliest times where I realized, oh, games aren't just silly fun, or like they're not just games, if you know what I mean. They're actually a deep form of entertainment that I connect with. And it'll be definitely something in Final Fantasy 7, 8, or 9, which are the golden three for me, in the Final Fantasy series. Possibly 8, because at the time I was like, I don't know, 14, 15. So very much heavily related with emo squall. And going through my angst, and I don't know, just the way they come together and like they support each other and things like that. I think it was just very, very deep and meaningful in general. I can't really point to a single line of dialogue right now, but yeah. Oh, I tell you what, actually, there's one piece of dialogue that hits me, and I think is it Mass Effect 2 or Mass Effect 3? And there's the scientist dude, and if you do the storyline there. He goes up to rectify what he did to the Krogans, like, you know, to re redeem himself for what he did to the Krogans. And he says this line that just makes me well up every time. And he's like, had to be me. Someone else would get it wrong. And so he goes up and basically sacrifices himself. And it's like, and it's something he said throughout the thing, like, you know, it always has to be him because someone else would get it wrong. And I don't know, it's just really meaningful to me, really impactful. Stuff
That's
like that.
nice because question two, literally question two there is, do games make you emotional? And I think
Yes.
that speaks volumes, right?
Yeah. I'm a very emotional dude. I cry at movies and games all the time. They get me good, man. The opening to The Last of Us makes me cry every time. The opening to Expedition 33 made me cry. Like there's so many moments in video games where I just sit there with tears in my eyes and just like, oh, I can't believe. No. You know?
I love because I've not finished 33 either. I started it and then super busy and different stuff like that. So I'm going to go back to it
Yeah.
soon. But no joke, I hadn't seen much of it. I knew about it loads, but I hadn't seen much of it. After the first, how do I phrase it, disappearances?
Yes.
The first 30 minutes, I was like, this is going to kill me. This isn't,
Yeah.
this is going to absolutely wreck
Yeah,
me.
yeah. The game is gonna emotionally. Yeah.
Because I like the argument that movies are movies because you can sit and watch them and invest in them, but games are games because you play it. You go through it yourself.
You're kind of with the character. It's
Yeah.
not like movies where you just sit there, you know, it's non-interactive, you're just an observer. It feels very different. You know, I still cry at movies, but with the game, you go with the character, you journey with the character, you control their actions. You progress the story. Story doesn't work without you. So it's a deeper connection for sure.
Two more.
Go for
Quick
it.
fire answer. Which villain deserves her own game?
Which villain deserves their own game? Oh my God. Oh, Wesker. Definitely Wesker. I don't know how there's not been a like DLC or anything where you get to play as Wesker for a story mode. That'd be awesome.
Is that not just the most agree, like that just makes the most sense to me. There's that, and my argument was, or suggestion is Andrew Ryan from BioShock, playing as,
Oh
because I've read the
yeah, he
books,
would be
playing his
cool.
younger years on the come up would be great.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
there's a lot of stuff with Wesker where throughout Resident Evil 1, 2, 0, Code Veronica 4, 5, he's doing his own stuff. Like in 0 and 1, he's working in the background, getting, research and stealing stuff and playing the STARS members. And you see some of it in like Umbrella Chronicles and Darkside Chronicles, where you see a bit of what he's up to in between. And I read the books. The books by S.D. Perry are amazing, by the way. The Resident Evil books, they're fantastic. And you find out a lot more about what he's been doing in behind the scenes. In a separate ways type thing, like they do for Ada, but as Wesker in the early games. Oh, that'd be awesome.
And then final question on the coach's questions is, what's something in gaming you're yet to do but plan to? And what's something in, I'll say content, but let's say voice acting or media or any kind of extra outside gaming that you're yet to and plan to?
Right, so the gaming, what am I wanting to do or plan to in terms of like
Yeah,
on.
so maybe there's a certain series you've not played yet, or maybe you want to start streaming, or you want to, I don't know. There's a whole host.
Oh, well,
You mentioned
actually,
earlier about maybe playing some tournaments.
yeah, so actually, yeah, the streaming thing is something. I know everybody streams these days, but I am the go-to Resi guy in my friend group. I'm currently taking one of my best friends through the Resident Evil franchise. And we've just got to Resident Evil 5, so now we're playing co-op together. But before that, we went through zero, went through 1, 2, 3, 4, all of them. And he was mostly spectating, and I was like taking him through, and I was talking him through stuff. And so I'd love to stream in general because I love gaming and like hanging out with people. But I specifically want to stream the entire Resident Evil franchise from start to finish, and do that as a big series just for fun. Not even for like tons of views or whatever, but just because it's my passion, my love, and I want to just kind of play and talk about Resi and have some fun, make some jokes throughout. Like, I love it. It's good.
And then, what about in terms of, I mean, I call it content creation, but what about in terms of career-wise? Is there anything you're sort of striving for? Do you want to be actually an actual physical is the wrong phrase. That's not what I mean. But in terms of like an actual on-camera actor, is that something you want to try?
I wouldn't mind it. I've done some on-camera work. It's not where my passion lies. I'll be honest, video games is where my true passion is, and just doing voice acting in general. But I would like to do performance capture. That's something I've not done. I'd like to do performance capture. That would be really, really cool to be in there, in the suit and with props and like maybe with other actors as well. It'd be super nice.
Especially nowadays, right? It must be quite a nice experience now. Because if you keep that same freedom of thought, the
Yeah.
experimentation level must be so high.
Yeah, and it's getting better and better tech all the time. So nowadays, most of them do it with iPhones in front of them. Like, I don't know if you saw, like, I think even in the Expedition 33 motion capture stuff, if you see the behind the scenes footage, they mostly wear head cams with phones on them now. And they use that and just a load of dots on their face. Whereas before, it was a way harder process. But it would be really, really fun to do some performance capture.
I mean, quick sidebar. One of my favorite things you've done recently is your shout out to Ben Starr, because the whole like, I thought I was onto a winner here with having my deep
I
British
know.
voice
I
and
could talk like
everything.
this all the time. But sadly, Ben Starr is already there.
I say about, because you put to Boxyarty. I was like, can you please stop being this satirical British, like down to earth guy? That's kind of my gig.
Ultimately, there's enough space for all of us.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, Ben Starr is one of my favorite voice actors by far, and he deserves it. Like, he's fantastically talented, charming, charismatic. And he's just brilliant. Like him as Verso in Expedition 33, him as Clive Rossfield in FF16. And his favorite Final Fantasy is also Final Fantasy VIII. So I love that man. Like, he's my favorite is also Final Fantasy VIII. So, kindred spirits and all that.
Yeah, great stuff. Now we tend to finish with creator spotlights. So in this section, this is your chance to either shout out creators you really enjoy, or maybe other actors or other people in the industry.
Ooh.
But just give us an idea of the type of content you enjoy when you're online and what you consume most and why you enjoy it.
Wow, there's so many that I could shout out to. Tons of
Or
voice
make away.
actors and narrators. Like, I follow so many. And there's just too many to mention by name on the voice side, if I'm honest. But in terms of creators, I mean, we've mentioned Tom before over at Retro Gamer. He's great. And Boxy, of course. Great, great creators. Definitely recommend those. I consume a lot of comedy stuff as well. But I have to admit, I'm very terrible at remembering the exact names of all these creators. I should be better at it, but I share a lot of their stuff all the time. Ben Kearns, he's a fantastic impressionist and voice actor who's been doing a lot of Matt Berry stuff. You might have seen Matt Berry as his kind of like favorite, but he does a load of other stuff as well. But yeah, no, he's definitely worth shouting out. God, so many. But yeah, I think I'll stick there for now.
Because what is it about things? If you're, I don't know, if you're scrolling on Instagram or TikTok or you're going through YouTube
Yeah.
videos short, what is it about a video or a person that would grip you?
Creativity, not just being cheesy, trash, trend following stuff. Like, there's a space for it, and sometimes the trends are okay or whatever. But I like original stuff. I like original content. I don't really do a lot of like the lip syncy stuff. It's fine. Again, has its place. Not really my jam. I always, if something's funny or if something's amusing, I try to find the original. Because, like on TikTok, for example, there's a lot of copied and duplicated stuff, and they tend to reuse the sound and just do their own thing of the same thing. But I always go and hunt down the original and find the original content to kind of like and enjoy that. But cosplayers are pretty cool, martial artists, performance capture artists, singing videos. I love singers, learning how to sing better. Most of it is about creative growth rather than entertainment. Or rather than just entertainment. Like, if there's a talent or a skill, then I'm very like, wow, yeah, buddy, get on, like, good on you.
Stuff that provides substance for me is, I think,
Yeah.
is that, that sort of epitomizes what you just said, because I don't want to see, I don't want the trends even called, the one where they're falling down onto midair and singing. I don't need that in my life. I'm just, I want to see, like, a Boxy Art is great because he provides something that's funny, but I can actually learn something from him.
Yes.
And so I always get, again, substance out of it. And then what we do is we flip it, and this is called Champion the Gamer for a reason.
Ooh.
Obviously, you've got the whole career that you're forging and making waves in. But if someone doesn't know you that well, and hopefully by now they do, but why should someone follow you?
Why should they follow me? Ooh. I'm pretty funny sometimes when I can pull it out of the bag. I do a lot of fun impressions. I sing. I basically just like to entertain and have fun and connect with people. So if you follow me, then you'll definitely get a response in the comments, for example. I don't really do any of that dilly-dallying and ignoring people. I love nerdy stuff and nerdy people and just other good, kind people in the world. So I think we could just connect on that level.
Because are you across, well, obviously I do know, but are you across Instagram and YouTube and everywhere like that?
I am on everything. So I have a love-hate relationship with social media. Yes, it has its downsides, but it is a necessary evil in especially in the voice acting world. So I do have fun with it, and I'm on every platform. So I'm on Blue Sky, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, TikTok. Well, I think that's pretty much everything.
Because the question I would have on that, because I'm curious about the whole system of things, and Super
Yeah.
Mega Retro's got a question about it, so I'll bring that into this. I take the internet as a massive ocean that's completely negative, right? The sea is completely negative, and there's little islands spread about that you, some you can't see, some you can't reach for years, and some across the other side of the world, and everything, but the islands of positivity and productivity
Oh,
and
yeah. I've
networking.
met some of my best friends online.
Yeah, and so there are out there. You've got to take your balanced brain onto your boat, onto this space, go and let's see it for a little bit, jump back on your boat and go back to your safe space again. Is that how, whether it's voice acting or acting or any kind of stuff in media, works now, where people that are looking for voice actors, looking for actors, looking for people to work in movies and everything, there's so many people out there now that it's an endless supply. So it's almost pot luck in a way of where you get picked up from. Is that how industry people approach that? there's like an endless supply of people they can have. So as long as you keep putting the right stuff out there, eventually you'll get found sort of vibe. Is that how you sort of approach that?
Pretty much. Like, I mean, so in terms of content creation, I don't do it for likes. And now, it's a controversial thing to say because obviously we're on social media, so we're obviously after a few likes and views and whatever. But I'm not about numbers, I'm about quality over quantity. So I put stuff out there about Resident Evil or with my impressions or the songs that I like or I like to sing or whatever. And I want to connect with people that it resonates with. I don't just want a ton of followers. I just want genuine followers who like want to connect with me and what I do and how we do it. But in terms of the voice acting side, yeah, it can be like that because I do a lot of my impressions and stuff for fun, but I've always done impressions to figure out what I can do with my voice. So even a bad impression is a gateway to a new character, is what I say. And so I just put myself out there. It's hard sometimes because there's stuff that I post where I'm like, why am I posting this? Like, who's going to care about this? Or what am I even doing this for? But you'll be surprised. So I've got a few gigs off Instagram Reels because people have heard my impressions or people have heard a voice I've done. They're like, hey, we think you'd be great for this trailer, actually. And again, it's a long-term game. So it's about standing out and showing why you when it comes to voice acting. Like, be a genuine, kind person at your core and just put yourself out there and be you. And that's what I try to do with my stuff. Yes, I do impressions and characters and everything, but the me side of things, it's me. Like, I'm just my usual nerdy, dorky self. And, I like to get along with people. I like people. I don't do douchey stuff most of the time. I try to be a kind person. And I think just being a genuine, good person and being yourself is what stands out alongside the work. And people are like, you know what? He seems like an all right guy. I'd like to work with him. It looks like it'd be easy to work with.
Because I mean, Super Mega Retro was asking like how, quote, how the hell, but how do you actually get into acting and voice acting? Like, what do they do to go? And I would sort of argue, rightly or wrongly, that your CV is obviously online, isn't it? So as long as, like you said there, you're making your own reels in a way by just putting stuff out, put it out there, just put it out there, leave it in the ether, and eventually someone will pick it up. Yes, you can email people, you can get in contact with businesses and companies and whatever. That's part and parcel of it, like you would have any other job. But use social media as your tool. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely use it as a tool. I mean, you should definitely just use it for what it is. Like you said before, where you dip in the ocean, you see what you want to see and you dip out. You got to be careful out there because there's so much content and there's so much fake stuff. There's so much stuff that's not genuine. There's so much, I mean, don't trust anything. Don't even trust me. Like, I'm someone online who you don't know and I'm making posts. If people don't think I'm genuine, I don't blame them because, you should be suspicious about everything online. It's a better way than just believing everything you see and hear because there's a lot of weird content out there and a lot of stuff taken at face value without any cognitive thought being put on top with critical thinking. But use it as a tool without being cold. All right. It's kind of like a weird combo. If you're going to use social media, use it and be you and do what you love and do what makes you happy. Like, I make content I want to make. That's why I don't get a lot of views. Because I don't get a ton of views and I don't get a ton of followers because I don't do the trends. I don't do certain things. I do whatever I feel like doing. And then that's it. I have fun doing it and I have fun sharing it with the people who follow me and we have some fun in the comments and that makes me happy. But if you're doing it for follows and if you're doing it for likes and if you're doing it because you expect a gig off everything you do, then don't do it because it's not going to work that way at all. It's kind of like rolling the dice if you want work off social media. Be present, yeah, exist. Talk about what you believe, talk about what you want to do as a voice actor, fine. But don't expect it to be this magical machine that if you just do it right and follow the right thing and do the right trends, then you'll get seen and found. Like, it works differently for everyone. Everyone's got their own different journey going on and it will happen when it happens. But as long as you just stay true to yourself and put yourself out there in a way that's genuine to you, then eventually it'll pay off.
And I mean, paying off can mean a number of different things, can't it? Because I'm like, there's accounts out there that have got so many thousands, millions of people following, but it's empty because it is, well, not empty. It's a business for them, I get it. But like,
Yeah, but it's
it's
too
an empty.
many to keep in
Yeah.
touch with,
And it depends what you're doing for, I suppose. But if you're looking for actual engagement, then if you've not built it organically, whatever, it's not going to feel the same. And you're not going to build those networking connections. Whether it's for business or for work or just to make friends, it's not going to be there if you make it as an empty statement of
Yeah,
Push
no.
TikTok promote, push Instagram promote. Like, it's not going to work that way, you know? So.
Exactly. And I will be honest, I don't know how they keep up. Anyway, I get why people with tons of followers don't reply to everyone or don't reply in general, because I struggle sometimes and I don't have that many. But I'll have like a video on TikTok do something like 100,000 views or something, and then it will suddenly get flooded in comments, and it's overwhelming, man. Like I struggle even just with that, and I've only got like 4,000 followers.
Which is criminal, by the
But it's tricky enough even at that level. So I don't even know how they do it with hundreds of thousands, or I mean, the ones with millions of followers, they have someone, they have people, they've hired people, they have to. There's no other way.
Ah, cool. We'll bring it to a close, but we always say at the finish point, is there anything you want to finish with?
Kindness first. Be kind to each other. That's my big finisher statement. I just always promote kindness. I just want everyone to be a little bit kinder in this world. I think there's space for it.
Is the industry welcoming, do you think?
Yes, I would say it's a tricky question because the industry games industry as a whole is in a very turbulent time right now. There's been a lot of layoffs, there's been a lot of changes. But as newer studios are progressing, as newer games are coming out that focus on different things, they're not just chasing money. I'd say there's more and more welcoming space in the industry coming up. And there's the newer generations and my generation and the generations below start coming up with the way we think and the way we want to do things. Then, yeah, I think it's getting a lot more welcoming all the time.
I'd like to hear that, because I was just going to quickly say, I think, especially with GTA 6 coming out, I think there's a big f fall or drop of a curve coming where we're going to get more Among Us's and indie studios come out, these smaller titles, smaller quote unquote, that are made with love and made with the game at the heart of it, because there's so many open worlds and these big massive games that feel empty of any kind of, like, they're just part of big studios. And I feel like there's a big call for these love fests to come back. So hopefully that is, what we see.
Well, that's why there's been a little bit of a wildfire around Expedition 33. So, like, I don't usually jump on a bandwagon and I don't jump on a hype train. I never do that. In fact, the hype train usually makes me not play a game for about 5 years. I'm very resistant to people pressuring me into playing something. But this one, I don't know, it hit right. My friends wouldn't stop pestering me about it and was like, Sam, you need to play this game. You will love it. The music, the voice acting, and all of it. Like, it's you, man. You'll love it. So I was like, fine, fine, fine. I'll play it. And yes, it is incredible. But it's doing a lot of, like, it's creating this wildfire because it was such a genuine production for this team to put together. So it's made with heart. It's made with soul, it's made with passion, it's made with all of these things. And it's an original story. There's like a lot of cool stuff in there that was just made with love. And I think that's where some of the industry has gone wrong, is that it's like, chasing the charts or chasing the money. And like there was a wave where everyone wanted to make a live service game because Fortnite and all the others make tons of money. But not everyone's able to make a live service game. So it's just one of these things where this was just creativity. They wanted to make this game. There was a vision. It got made and it's great. And I think we just need a little bit more of that. And in indie games as well, Animal Well, Inscription, Balatro even was pretty great. And Blueprints, like all this stuff where it's like original, cool ideas that we just want to make. We have to remember as game devs that we are players who want to play. So let's just make something that's fun to play and fun to do. Yes, it's a business at the end of the day. You got to make money, but starting with the money is not how the creativity works. Like, it has to have this feature or it has to have that because that's what's making money. It's not going to work that way.
It's like Expedition. Like I said about the whole battle system and turn-based thing. What's genius about Expedition 33? Other games might and probably do have this thing in it. The ability to dodge has changed the whole thing round for mainstream.
Dodge and parry in turn-based combat is awesome.
Yeah, because it's something that, and again, maybe it's more prevalent than I realise, but that alone would make someone that's new to turn-based want to play it. And I
I
think
think it eases it, yeah.
it's not like it is a groundbreaking thing, but it's not a groundbreaking new thing. It's something they've added to another system. But that alone, that small, dare I say, small innovation has made a massive difference. That's all we needed. We didn't need a whole brand new game. if you know what I mean. A new like mechanic or game system. We don't need that. Just give us what we already have. We like it, but make it more accessible.
And that's literally why it's doing so well, because it's an old theme with a new twist on a lot of aspects, even like the world map and everything else. It's very like RPG, JRPG, follows a lot of the patterns that we know and we're used to, and it hits that nostalgia mark, yeah. But it's just a new twist on all of that. And I think that's one of the reasons it does so well, is that they're not trying to change the wheel. They're not trying to, reinvent the wheel, sorry. They're not trying to change it too much. They're sticking with what works, elaborating on it, and that's what makes it good.
Because we've had the debate before about is it, are we at a point where there's so many games and type of games the creativity is difficult, which obviously it always is, but we don't see a lot of new games. But
It's the
that
same with
is
you.
that, you know, the exhibition showed that you don't need to be a new game per se, just give us a twist.
Yeah, I mean, it's not trying to do something crazy different, but it does do a lot of new different stuff at the same time. So it's pretty cool. But it's the same with the music side of things, right? Music industry, like and pop tracks. It's really hard to come up with something original these days.
As Ed Sheeran showed. This has been tremendous, my friend. We've learned a lot, and I hope you've enjoyed yourself. We will end it here. I would encourage anybody, for the love of God, please go and follow Sam because you're gonna get more than you bargain for in a better
It's very
form.
random. When you ask me, like, why should people follow you? My instinct was like, don't. There's no, don't
That's why we
follow
do
me.
it. That
It's
the hard.
random chaos.
The hardest question ever on this podcast will always ever be, why should someone follow you? Because
Yeah.
the best people don't know how to sell
I
themselves.
have no idea. That's why I was just like, I sing, I do voices. I don't know if that's your bag. Come along.
Yeah. Because you said about being variety, you're a variety person, which
I
is
am, yeah.
a great thing to follow. So, and I say, give Sam a follow everywhere. Check out all his work and everything because he
To my
deserves
house, everywhere.
that and more. All right, I'll let you go, my friend. You've been episode 72, and I'll catch everybody on the next one.
I just want to say thank you so much for inviting me on this, man. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've rambled your ear off, and I loved the randomness of not knowing the questions. I actually like doing that. And so Flying Wild was pretty great. You got a lot of rambly answers. I hope you enjoyed that, and I hope everyone listening enjoyed me chatting away.
We love me. I'll tell you now, we've loved it. So, now I really appreciate it, pal. And again, I'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah.